Hello, before we get going on the podcast, let me first tell you about DNA Discoveries. So DNA Discoveries is a program of online talks that can help you learn more about DNA for family history. You can find answers to questions such as why you should be wary of working with tiny matches. What's the science behind these tests? You can also learn about the excellent tools such as Banyan and Watteau, which can help you really work out those difficult cases in family history and DNA when you really feel like you're not going to get to the bottom of it, but these tools can help you do that. Our programme of experts are truly amazing, and we're so proud to be working with people like John Cleary, Michelle Leonard, Donna Rutherford, Sophie Kay, Blaine Bessinger, Karen Evans, Laura House and Jana Hellstein. We know it's going to be such an informative and inspiring set of talks, and we really look forward to seeing you there. You can find out more at www.family-tree.co.uk, and the talks start on the 24th of March. Hello and welcome to the Family Tree podcast. My name's Helen Tovey, I'm editor of Family Tree. And with me today is a special guest. It's a very old friend, Duncan, who is new to family history. And I always love talking to people about when they're just getting into family history. And it's fascinating to find out what it's like to join the world of family history as it is at the moment with all the tools and resources they have available, but also how overwhelming it can be because there's so much. You're suddenly in at the deep end with today's family history world. So welcome, Duncan. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you for inviting me. And it's a pleasure to be here. And I'm looking forward to our chat.
So you're extremely new to family history, aren't you? It's only about 2 or maybe 3 weeks ago you met up.
Yeah.
And you thought you're going to make a start on it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Because I sort of inherited my late aunt's parchment family tree, which she did for my paternal side of the family. She was my father's sister. And unfortunately, she died during COVID. But what she had done and had done for years was a wonderful parchment family tree, which involved her actually visiting graveyards, looking at parish records. And she got back to 1680, I think, and a lot of my relatives are based around North Links, East Notts, around there. So, yeah, it was quite fascinating. So I felt some responsibility that I had to sort of carry this on. So and then we're prompted by our kids brought me and my wife a DNA test, which we took in 2021. And so, yeah, so it's taken me really 4 years to pick it up and run with it. And as you said, ably assisted by yourself, because I came around yours and you gave me a quick tutorial on ancestry, which I do find a bit clunky, to be honest. But I mean my computer's really slow as well, which doesn't help. But so, you know, anybody listening out there, don't be put off by it's ancestry's fault. It's probably not. It's your computer. But that's what I'm blaming anyway.
It's fine. I think it's useful to have all different views and honest experiences. Otherwise, if you think that everyone else is finding it easy and you find it hard, then it can deter you, whereas it's sometimes encouraging to know that other people find things hard too. So what I like is, so you inherited this wonderful tree, which is kind of a mixed blessing, isn't it? Because you've got this information, but it is names on a tree, and you unless she provided you with a big box of papers or a written kind of report to go with it, you don't know where these came from or how she arrived at them or what jobs people had or anything, did you? Is that right?
No. That's absolutely right, Helen. This name's on a tree. And since I've started plotting it on Ancestry, I found that somebody's made a mistake somewhere along the line, whether it's my aunt and her parchment or whether it's Ancestry, I don't know. But so I'm already frustrated by different names and dates of birth. Which is fine. I mean, it is going back over 150 years, so you know there's bound to be some mistakes. But it has been a revelation in some respects, I must admit, to see how accurate it is. And when you do log on to Ancestry, the hints that you get and the next people in the tree correspond with her tree. You think, well, that's fantastic. So you know, some of it's true, some of it's not. But I don't know who's wrong. There must be loads, but as I said, she did die in 21. Her husband's still alive, but I don't know what he's got. So,
that could be another mixed blessing. So I think it would be well worth asking him if he's got any paperwork, and asking if you can look through it, potentially make copies of some of it, even just taking photos with your phone, because that's useful, because that's really, really useful, because it's providing where she got her information from. And then and you can independently do your own research, building out the details you've got using the records that you can access via Ancestry.
Yeah.
In the census.
I've done this a bit because I'm new to it. I am incredibly haphazard about your thing, and I don't keep enough notes. This is another recommendation for anybody else starting new. Make sure you write it all down. You can flip between website and website and record, and then 10 minutes later, when did I find that? And then you're stuck in a hole and you can't get out of it and you can't find what you do. So write everything down. I'd made that mistake. I don't write things down enough.
Can I drill you and tell you again what you need to be doing?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
So it's super simple. Once you get in the habit of it, it's literally, so imagine if you're cooking a meal, you wash your hands. If you like wearing an apron, you put on an apron, you make sure the side's clean, and then you start cooking, okay? And it's exactly the same in genealogy. You just need to open up it could be a Word document or a paper book. At the top, write your research question. So what do you want to do today? It doesn't matter what it is, whether you want to find out about their house, whether you want to find out about somebody's military service, whether you want to find out a particular surname, whatever it is, write down your research question. Then below that, you're going to be formulating a research plan. So you're going to be like, so how am I going to go about answering this question? So you're going to be thinking which records could potentially help me. So you're going to just be getting your brain going, thinking like, well, I'm thinking in the late 1800s, I'm thinking about somewhere in England, what records are available to me? So you'll already know the census would be like your first probably go-to place, wouldn't it? So you're just helping yourself. It's like a warm-up exercise, but you're writing it all down. And then you go to whichever website, and you might want to be using a combination of websites. You write down which websites you're searching, which record collections you're searching within, what you search on. So whether you're searching for Thomas Evans, born 1868 plus or minus 5 years, that's your search terms. You think he's roughly born in that parameter, that's what you're searching on. Write that down. Write down what you find out. When you find out relevant stuff, add it to your tree. Repeat.
Yeah, okay. This is what not to do. Have your family tree open on 3 devices, like I do. I sit on my phone, it's on my tablet, and it's on my computer. So it's all over the place. I'm sitting there watching TV, getting an idea. I just checked that. Go into Ancestry on my phone. And and then 10 minutes later, I'm distracted. And then half hour later, I think, now what did I find out then?
Yeah.
It's schoolboy errors, yeah. I should devote some time. I mean, I did when I first started a few weeks ago, I did devote a whole morning to it, which was very, very structured. Got my parchment spread out on the table, got my computer. And that was fantastic. But then I guess we'll talk about it in a minute, but I got so distracted by some of the information that I was able to help other people with, and other people helped me, which was absolutely incredible. So I'm looking forward to talking about that.
Yes, definitely. So we've talked about kind of the nitty-gritty of getting going. So you've been helping someone else and they've been helping you. This sounds amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that's just incredible. I couldn't believe this. So when I opened Family Tree, if you remember, we were together and there were already some messages from 2021 regarding the DNA matches, so I thought my first protocol on this particular day, whenever day that was, I thought it'd be a bit rude not to respond to these people 4 years later. So I did. And one of the people who responded to me, she was connected. She was actually second cousin on my mother's side. So quite a close relation. I thought, in terms of DNA, because I haven't kind of met. I mean, the top one was my cousin. Again, second cousin now. That's a different story. So anyway, so 4 years later, I sent this woman an email apologizing for my tardy response, and I got straight into it. And I said, look, I think we're related on my mother's side, and their name was Horrocks. And I said, because I'd already checked, and on Ancestry, and I saw that she's quite active because she'd been active a few hours ago. So I'm sorry for the late reply. I see you're active, but who I am, this is what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. And yes, thank you for your email. I think we have some connections on our mother's side of the family, the name's Horrocks. She was absolutely lovely when she got back to me, so happy that I'd got back to her. She said, yes, it's a Horrocks, it's a Horrocks. And then she told me what it was that she was looking for, and it was her father's dad, who he didn't know, because this guy left his mother when she became pregnant with him in 1926. This is how far back it went. What? And so I said, well, I think I know who it is. So I went back into my family tree and put a few searches, and it transpires that, yes, one of my maternal grandmother's brother was indeed this long lost relative. This woman had been trying to find and had no idea, and I found him. So I did the ancestry storyboard thing, you know, the last storyboard, and I sent that. I didn't know how to share that with her, so I said, look, if you give me your email address, I'll PDF it and send it to you. Which I did. She was absolutely over the moon, Helen. It was so nice to, you know, to have been able to help someone like that. She'd been spending years and years. And let me just get the
message. That's wonderful as well that she messaged you 4 years ago, and she would have probably long given up hope. And lots of us do message other people, and we always say, don't worry, you never know what's happening in somebody's life. They might get back to you in the end, and you're one of those lucky stories. The person did get back in the end. So it's good to hear. Anyone else?
Yeah, so I'm not. Yeah, so what happened?
Not got answers. It's good to hear you might get an answer one day. Yeah. So what happened?
Well, so interestingly, so her dad, he was born in Peterborough, where I live, for your rest of your listeners, and her grandmother was courting Herbert, who's this guy, and fell pregnant with her dad in 1925. And when Herbert found out, he ended the relationship, and her grandmother Emma raised her dad on her own until she got married to another chap 9 years later. So it was so good. Yeah, so like you said, she'd been spending all that time trying to find it, and I was able to help her out. So I was really quite chuffed about that. So that was one. What was another message? Then I had another close connection on DNA, I think, because that got me thinking then about my mother's side of the family. I think I may have told you before, but I was aware that my mother didn't know her biological father. She was brought up by a chap who she didn't realize until she was 16 wasn't her biological father, when he had to share her birth certificate for her to get a job. And she said, well, hang on, what's that? Then, you know, that's not my name. And it wasn't her name. So her father and her mother had to fess up to her that, yeah, you know, this guy's not your real father, which mm-hmm. was devastating for her at that sort of young age. This would be in early 50s.
Mm.
And my mother's still alive, by the way, so I can able to share this sort of stuff with her. So she knew the surname, obviously, because she saw it on a birth certificate, but she couldn't recognize, and she hasn't got that birth certificate anymore, because she was then formally adopted, and with the new birth certificate with her new father, non-biological father, years later, and that's how she spent the rest of her life. So she's always been intrigued about this guy. Who was he? What sort of life did he lead? And then the rest of it. So I knew his surname, and then her brother, on his birth certificate, he had the name as well, but he was a stepbrother, because he was a brother with the new father. Yeah, so this father went on to have a big family, of which my mum was the oldest, and nobody knew that my mum wasn't their biological sister.
Mm.
So he also had this. And this is probably a question I want to ask you, really, because I was intrigued by this. I've been talking to him now, so I've seen his birth certificate, and it does give the name of the father and mother, but she gave her maiden name, and she also gave her married name, but she since had a divorce. A social divorce. I mean, is that normal to put that on the birth certificate?
They would previous names, definitely.
Yeah.
It can be really helpful. Sometimes it can even have a few previous names.
Right. So that would probably tend to be on the mother's side, wouldn't it, if they're married a few times? Yeah.
Mm.
So my uncle, at that point, didn't know who his father was because he was confused about this. So he thought he shared a father by a mother. So it all got really, really, really confusing. But he sort of thought that he knew the name of this guy, his first name. So I just put the search in Ancestry. I got his first name, and Ancestry threw him up, which is unbelievable. And via somebody else's family tree, who hadn't contacted me, but the person who had contacted me was connected to this other guy's family tree, cut long story short. So I emailed her, and let me just show that trail of emails, which was really interesting. I said, look, I'm looking for my mother's biological father, and I see that you're connected to this particular family tree. What did I say this? Yeah. And she said she hadn't come across this name before. Again, she was active on Ancestry, and her family tree is quite comprehensive. But she said she'd have a look and do some investigating. And then a few days later, she was checking with her relatives, and she said, "Oh yeah, that name rings a faint bell with some people, but they don't really know." So she was actually contacting her relatives on my behalf, which I thought was wonderful. And I said, okay, thanks for trying out, but you know, maybe nothing to come of it. Again, a few days later, then I told her what the backstory was, that my mother found out at 16 and the guy who she'd lived with all her life wasn't a real father. And she said, "Oh, that's so sad," and the rest of it. "I will try again. I'll try again." Okay, thanks for trying. A few days later, she said, "Yeah, I've been down a rabbit hole and I think I found something for you." And she actually found the marriage certificate to my grandma and also a newspaper article from after they split up. Now I'm going to stop there, Helen, and I'm going to tell you the end of this story, because I think it's quite an amusing way to do it. So once all this came out, I was talking to my mother, her three surviving siblings, about what I found and the rest of it, and they all were quite shocked, and you know, and it's quite sad in a way, but you know, some of it's amusing. And the amusing thing for me was they all said independently that, "Yeah, it's funny this. Dad, their dad, used to sit at the dinner table and he used to poke his teeth out with his tongue like that all the time, and we'd all laugh at it." And pretty weird in the 1950s that he was doing this. Like, people thought, you know, tooth decay, no one thought anything of it. But they all said, and we used to ask him, "Yeah, what happened there, Dad?" And it went silent. So nobody used to talk about why my granddad used to have false teeth. So that's it. That's the end of the story. Going back, for the woman that found some stuff, she found the marriage certificate. So I was able to put that on my tree that my grandmother, my biological grandmother, had married this guy, and there was a birth certificate. But the marriage only lasted about. This is some advice I want from you. I need to get the divorce papers to put the final bit of the jigsaw in place. So if I can get the date of the divorce, which I think was about, so they got married in 34 and my mum was born in 35. So I think somewhere between 34 and about 37, 38, they must have divorced. But I'm finding Ancestry a bit difficult to find the divorce papers. Now they do it, I'm sure, but so I might need to ask you advice about that. So I don't know whether you want to share that advice with the rest of your listeners, if anybody's listening.
Sure. So I have to say, I'm really bad on divorce records. And I think my first port of call, so this is like such a kind of cop-out answer, but it's such a really, really helpful answer. If you are wanting a record collection, or you think there's got to be records on this, but you don't know where to start, then the best place to go is to go to the National Archives website. So it's discovery.nationalarchives.gov.uk. And in there, on the homepage, I'll find out where it is. It will say like research guides, and they have an A to Z of research guides. And they also have research guides arranged by period. So you could look for research guides covering the 1900s, 1800s, back and back and back. So I go into the research guides, literally look under D, see what they have. We can do this live, see what they have for divorce. And then you can read the research guide and it will say whether records are commonly held, whether they've commonly survived, which periods the National Archives might hold, the National Archives, as well as having an online catalogue to its many of its records. It also provides links to about 2,500 other archives around the UK. So you can do a kind of national search across many different archive catalogues. It's not comprehensive, but it's really, really good. It's a really good starting point. So we can do this to find out about divorce records and see what's available. And I'll have a quick, I don't want to make everyone weep with tiredness if I do a live search and it's on audio. So obviously it's not like Radio Gold, is it, doing? Me and Nathan have done this before, but okay. Well, let's have a look. But so what you're going to probably find is when you're looking in catalogues, and it depends the level to which a collection has been indexed and, you know, catalogued. So some indexes will some record collections will have been archived very, very fully, so you'll be able to put in, say, your grandfather's name in the divorce record collection and find his divorce record listed. Yeah. But and sometimes you go through to a digital image, and that's our ideal world that we would love to happen. But very often what you're going to find is it might just say that there are divorce records, for instance, I'm making this up entirely, you know, covering X year to X year.
Okay.
So it goes to the National Archives. Oh, yeah. So it's on the homepage. It says research guides. Browse our research guides. I'm going to click D for divorce, and let's see if we have anything for D for divorce. Otherwise, it might be like justice, like the Court of Justice. Divorce, 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 divorce. Divorce has something on divorce, so let's have a read. So I'm not going to read it all live now, but that's a really good way to find out about a new record collection or an area that you're stuck on.
Okay.
Yeah. Ah, okay. So you're right from the get-go, it's useful. You are unlikely to find documents for any records of divorce since 1937 among our records. Okay. So that's telling you that that's not going to be helpful for you. Another place which can be really useful to look in is newspaper reports, because you obviously the local newspapers tend to report all sorts of things which I believe are of human interest. So there's
That's the next part of my story, Helen, actually. Newspaper. Have you come to a dead end then with possible divorce papers?
So it says here, divorce case files, 1858 to 1972. Each divorce suit created a case file. National Archives holds case files for all divorces from the Supreme Court, 1858 to 1937, very few cases survive after 1937, which I've just said. What proportion of case files survive? 1858 to 1927, almost 100%. 1928 to 1937, 80%. And then just 0.2% of those after 1957. So I guess, yeah. So I'm sorry that I don't know about this. Okay, here we go. How do I search for case files? So this is, Ancestry does have some records, but they're only up to 1916, as far as I can see. So this is, you know, when I said a little while ago that when you're doing a research session, the best thing that you want to do is you want to write down your research question, then you're making a research plan to find likely records which are going to help you. So this would be an ideal case study. So you're sitting down, your research question is you want to find out about the divorce between your mother's birth parents, and so that's your research question. I want to find out about the divorce of my mother's birth parents, and then in your research plan you're going to be having a look to see which records can help you. So the first thing is really advisable is to go to the National Archives, to their research guides, and learn about the area, because I probably should know more about divorce records off the top of my head. I don't, but that whatever the subject is, there are so many subjects to learn about, and for every country, even within the British Isles, whether it's England, Ireland, Scotland, or Wales, and for each time period, there's so many variables across every different thing that, you know, the survival rates of the records, which records were kept in the first place, which records, as I say, survive the passages of time, which records have been digitised, which records are archived nationally, which records are archived in local record collections. There's lots of different variables you need to try and learn about, track down the records you need.
So, okay. So are you going to do a search on these names? No, no, no. Or...
No, because I can't do a search on the names. The catalogue isn't, as far as I can tell, isn't that detailed. So what we can do is off the podcast is we can, I'd need to learn it for myself. I'd do a survey to find out which divorce records, the survival rate for the records and where those collections are going to be held, whether I'm going to be looking nationally, whether I'm going to be looking locally, whether if I can't find any particular case files, I'd also be looking in the newspapers to find out if I can, you know, if there's any passing reference or any mention there. Yeah.
Okay. So that sort of leads me nicely on to newspapers, which is very good. So the message I got from this person who was helping me said, yes, I found the marriage certificate, and she said, but there's also a newspaper report when I put his name into the newspaper records, and it's not made good actually, and I think there's a connection between him and who I thought was my grandfather with regard to what happened in 1937. So and she sort of gave me a little tracy of it. And it transpires that my biological grandfather had beaten up this guy who looks as if it was my mum thought was a dad. And so that made me feel a bit ill. Really? And she said, yeah, it's a bit shocking. I wasn't sure whether or not to tell you. And I said, well, you know, you've told me now. I mean, I think, you know, family sort of folklore was that he was probably a wrong one. He was a bit of a drinker. And he wasn't very kind to my grandmother, apparently. That's a sort of, my mum was two, so she would have no recollection, but some of her cousins have told us some stuff, not a lot, but, and she buried it, and it's only coming out now. Oh, Helen, all this stuff is coming out now. So I sort of told people in the family this. I think I found that soon. You know, some information, but I'm not quite sure the details. So I actually then I decided to find a newspaper article myself. So via Ancestry, I went into the newspaper.com element of it, and I've signed up for that. Put his name in, and yeah, it came up, Helen. This came up, this court case, March 1937. My non-biological grandfather was travelling home on a bus from Peterborough to where they lived in New England, just off Lincoln Road. And the newspaper report went on to say that he was sitting on the top deck of a bus, and the defendant came up the stairs of the bus with a small group of friends, recognised my non-biological grandfather, and words were had. And so my non-biological grandfather got up out of his seat and went to get out, and there was a bit of a commotion. And the bus driver could hear what was going on, stopped the bus, came upstairs just as my grandfather was attacking this guy, which resulted in him losing teeth and being badly bruised.
So now that all makes sense why he had false teeth.
That all makes sense. I thought, God, he's my biological grandfather, this guy. So, yeah, so, but then he gets quite sad. So his only defense in court when asked why he did this is because his family, this guy broke up my family. This broke up my lovely family. And the article was actually headlined, the headline, strap headline was, unfounded jealousy. So door, that's, you know, said in court, yeah, this guy broke up my family. So that got me thinking, and I'll try to work out the timeline here. So this is why the divorce is important. So then talking to my mum's two brothers and sister about this, and my mum as well. And my mum's 90, by the way, and she lives in Spain. And so this is all the WhatsApp, because she's quite deaf. There'd be no point trying to phone her. So it's all happened on WhatsApp, this. So I've got a good WhatsApp record. It transpired that my mum lived in Northfield Road in Peterborough with her father and her mother and her grandmother and grandfather. Quite small house. The thing that gets me about this, and so they have lodgers as well. So they're talking lodgers. Now, these are quite small houses down there. So people wouldn't be living cheek by jowl. Now, I mean, I suppose this is the familiar thing about ancestry, isn't it? How people lived. Unbelievable. So many people live together in a house. So my non-biological granddad lodged in this house with his brother, and they came from Arundel, and they were sort of educated, but both engineers. This is 1937, probably early 30s, and they worked in the airline industry. And so they would have been reasonably well off, not too well off, because they were lodging in someone else's house, so they couldn't afford to buy a house or anything, or rent their own house. So, but they would have been probably a cut above the house, the occupants of houses that they were living in. My mum and my granddad and grandmother, who was from the census, I've the 31 census I've seen was a labourer. Yeah. So I think what has happened here is that whilst they were lodging, something must have happened between them both to set off this chain of events, whereby they actually left. I think my grandmother and my grandfather left the house because a newspaper report says that they'd been lodging in this house for 4 years, but he had left by then because his address was different. And I think so my mum and her mum were living with this guy elsewhere until she returned to the home, as it were. And so I just need to find out when that divorce happened, really, in a way, because that's quite significant. Because so the court case was March 37. They were married in 34. My mum born in 35. So it's quite a small period. So I think the divorce happened somewhere in that sort of timeline. Mm-hmm. So was the divorce, was the catalyst of their relationship the reason for the divorce, or was it my grandfather's ill treatment and my grandmother that was a catalyst? Who knows? The court decided it was the latter, quite clearly. The newspaper records clearly indicate that he had no grounds for this jealousy. He shouldn't have taken the law into his own hands. And the interesting thing is here as well, both my uncles, his sons, were incredibly surprised that he didn't fight back, because apparently he was in the army. He was a bit of a boxer, so he was able to look after himself. And they witnessed him looking after himself when they were young boys, you know, standing up to bullies and neighbours and the rest of it. And said, he didn't hit back. Maybe because there was a group of them, or maybe there's an honour thing going on here. And thought, you know what, bang to rights. I really have caused this, and I'll just take it on the chin or on the teeth. So I don't know that. So that's why I'm quite interested in finding out about the date of the divorce. Because it may well have been because they were there for 4 years and they were still living there, and his address was elsewhere, but my grandmother was back in the house. My mum would have been 2 or 3. She has absolutely no recollection of any of this whatsoever.
So that is really interesting. And the timeline, you're right, is going to be crucial. So you've got these addresses and these dates. So where have you got that information from? From the newspaper report?
Yes. That's another question for you as well. Like, I'm not sure from censuses whether you can. So the 31 census would be interesting here, wouldn't it? But can you search for an address on the on those? So if I got into the census website, could I put in whatever it was, something Northfield Road,
yes,
and then see if it
lived... on the census records? You can look by address, but the problem is the most recent census available for English and Welsh regions is 1921 because there's a 100-year close. But then the plot thickens because the 1931 got destroyed by fire during the Second World War accidentally. So there's no 1931 for England and Wales. And then there's no 1941 because the war was on. So they just did that 1939 register at the start of the Second World War because the war was raging. There wasn't one in 1941. So the next census we get is 1951 when me and you might or might not be around to see the 1951. Hopefully we both are. And then, but there are other things you can do. So there's electoral registers, and the best place, it's another website, is Find My Past has the most comprehensive electoral registers. And so that's really good because you'll be looking in the 30s. So the adults have all got the vote. So you'll be able to track all of the adults in the electoral registers. Like if you're looking before 1928, then it's not going to have a comprehensive list of all the adults, is it? So you are lucky from that point of view. So I would look at the electoral registers, and I would also do further newspaper searches. It could just be a one-off that your biological grandfather did this fight. There could be other, you know, if life took a kind of tough turn for him and he ended up doing a few misdemeanors, he could have had a few reasons why he keeps appearing in the newspaper, because the newspaper could be helpful for providing information about his address. If he does keep cropping up,
the actual chair of the magistrates bench, as you alluded to that, he had a past record of assault and affray and drinking, so almost you've been before me, you know, before Sonny. Now here you are again. I mean, it was you got a sort of £5 fine, I think, for it. So.
You know, back to this timeline, this is what I love about family history. So what is interesting is that your family stories that he was a bit of a drinker and maybe a bit, you know, not the greatest parent from that point of view. So that's the family story that's been passed down to you. And that could completely check out once you start looking at the records. But then also, if you piece together all the information you find in a timeline, and it could be that you find that he lives a squeaky clean life up until the time that his marriage starts falling apart and his wife is cheating on him, and then he starts having assault and affray and drinking, and he's just having a really bad patch because he's super stressed, demoralized. None of us should take the law into our own hands, but sometimes life gets when we don't live the life we thought we were going to live, and so then you feel more passionately about somebody then.
Well, exactly, that's exactly where I'm coming from, Helen. I think it's exactly the same as you, and it might have had a bearing on the rest of his life. I'll tell you something else in a minute. So yes, so definitely from reading the newspaper report, you can see that the magistrates court saw him as a man of pretty bad character, but my non-biological granddad is a man of good character, you know, engineer, worked in the factory, probably what, late mid-30s, they probably got to the stage where they thought that the threat of war was imminent, so involved in aircraft engineering and all that rest of the thing. I mean, what a blow this was. And you see fit to beat him up on the top deck of a bus. Go away. But the person that alerted me to all this, she said, she got back to me and said, oh yeah, she was fantastic. I mean, another sort of link here as well. She asked me during this course of emails, she said, do you used to work for Peterborough City Council? I said, yeah, I did. She said, oh, my dad knows you. So we had a chat about her dad, and I remember her dad when they used to work at Peterborough City Council. So that was weird. But she said, yeah, I've done some more digging. So she'd been really good, and she'd be obviously talking to a lot of her relatives, long and distant past about her relatives, and it transpires that, and he's just one entry on a big family tree, and he's just there, and he married her dad's grandmother, I think, and he wasn't nice to her either.
And
he wasn't nice. There was you know, I mean, there was domestic abuse.
Mm.
So I'm, a bit like you, I'm saying, well, what was the catalyst for all this? Was it because, you know, he had a lovely family that he thought was he was going to spend the rest of his life is, and then it all went wrong when these two lodgers moved in.
Yeah. Can I give you, because online is great, but can I give you a few, so we've established that looking for electoral registers on Find My Past would be really good for you. Newspapers are also available on Find My Past. There's loads of UK newspaper collections. There's a British newspaper archive. It's a massive collection of British Library newspapers, but that they're also available via Find My Past. So that would be really well worth you looking at that. And then because you're so lucky that you live in the rough area where, like the way you were saying about Lincoln Road, like I've lived near Peterborough for many years of my life. And so I know where you're talking about, but you're living and researching in the same area. So the two things I'd really advise you to do is get in contact with Peterborough and District Family History Society, because sometimes the local family history societies have created indexes and have local knowledge of record collections, and they'll be able to help you. So I recommend that you contact them, and also try a library, because when I was saying about going on Find My Past for electoral registers, then obviously local libraries aren't what they were. There's so much like digital access and limited opening hours and all that sort of thing, but they're still well worth reaching out to and seeing what they may have, which could help you, because that mid-20th century research can be harder than Victorian research because of closure periods for records, you know, that was established with the census and stuff like that. So making use of the expertise on your doorstep is a good idea.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think this family will have lived in a lot of places in Peterborough, because another sort of anecdote coming out of chatting to people that are still alive today is that they're always on the move, and what they used to do was they used to do moonlight flits, and they used to put socks on donkeys' feet so that they were silently as they were packing up at midnight and traipsing down the street, moving on to their next letting in Peterborough. So they've lived in a lot of places in Peterborough. So that'd be interesting just to try and find out all the places that they did live.
Definitely, definitely. Like when you set out to do your family history research, you were just trying to honour your, was it your great aunt, weren't you? Trying to honour
my aunt. Yeah, my aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to keep it going. And yet I've been stuck in this story at the moment, and I haven't moved since.
And you've got loads left to do on it as well.
It seems that way, Helen. Yeah, yeah. So I'm hoping the rest of it's more straightforward, to be honest. But it is a bit of closure, I think, for my mum and her relatives that didn't know this. So I've been able to inform them, and yeah, you know. So going back to the teeth, that all makes sense now.
I don't know what it says about my brain, but when you said about the teeth, I was like, I wonder if he had his teeth knocked out in a fight when you said it. And yeah, and then I couldn't believe it when that's actually what seems to have happened. That's just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, all good stuff. But yeah, so I'll take your tips on that, Helen. I will do a bit more research. And obviously, I wasn't aware that there's a Peterborough District Family History Society, which could be really useful.
Well, I really love your bunch of people. Yeah. And back to the 1939 register that I was bang on about. So that's the one which was taken on the 29th of September 1939. So you're not going to find people who have already signed up for the armed services in there, but you will find all the civilians, and the people yet to sign up will be recorded. So anybody like your mum, anyone who's born within the last 100 years, they just have a black line and you can't see their details. Sometimes there's a few people who slip through the net and they are younger than 100 years old and they do have their details visible. But on the whole, you're younger than 100, your details aren't showing. But people over 100, so i.e. your grandparents' generations, they'll and if they're civilians, they'll be showing up on the 1939 register. So you can search this on Ancestry.
Yep.
And, that's useful because that will give you another address point, and then you can see the, again, you'll get an idea of whether there are lodgers still living. Just to get another idea of where have the family, are the members of the family gone next? Who are they living with? How's life working out for them? So just, the more and more you find out, it's just useful to see.
And just to finish on this, so they eventually the family rented a house in Glebe Road near the football ground. And my mum's always talking fondly about Glebe Road. And at that point, her grandfather had died. So her grandmother had moved in with them, and she shared a room with her grandmother in those days. And she would have, you know, and this is during the war. You know, she just remembers that she used to love sharing a room with her grandmother, and she used to look forward to hearing her wedding ring click, click, flip on the stair banister as she came to bed. Sharing a room, a little girl sharing a room with her grandmother, and she felt very comforted by all that. So I guess she may have known that there was some bad stuff going on when she was really young, and this is like comforting for her that her grandmother was coming to bed with her. And very, very sadly, to finish off, her mother. So there were two brothers, and then there's a 10-year gap, and then there were two more children born between the relationship of my non-biological grandfather and this woman. And there were two girls, and then the second girl, she died in childbirth, having a baby in Glebe Road. Mm. 1956, and my mum would have been 21. I was waking up one morning, and her mother had died downstairs giving birth to her younger sister. Mm. She was faced with, you know, a young family, because she was, you know, the oldest by quite a long way.
Mm. It's tragic, yeah.
And so it wasn't long then before she moved out and got married, because, you know, she had it really, really stressful having to try the whole family together.
Mm.
Really. So yeah, so God, Helen, it's incredible, isn't it, really, that you find all this out.
I think it is, and quite often family history, like, it is really absorbing and really fun, and doing the research is kind of enjoyable, but it is continuously throwing up really stressful chapters of people's lives. But I do think, although it can be harrowing, then it is really useful, because it does, I'm sure it makes us be more understanding about other people's lives, because you just, time and again, you might make a snap judgment about somebody, and then you learn about what they live through, and then you suddenly you feel, no, well, of course they're going to have a short fuse, or because they've got all this background stress that they've had to lug around with them through their whole lives, or whatever it is, all little, you know, we all have so much stuff behind us. Well, thank you, Duncan. So I keep crossing you and telling you what you need to do next. What do you think you're going to do next in your chapter, just the last few minutes?
Right, okay, yeah. So I'm going to do I'm going to research the divorce, which is good, and you're giving me good tips for that. And I'm also going to look at what you suggested regarding further newspaper archives, find my past, and probably make a connection with Peter and District Family History to see what they've got to say. Mm-hmm. But again, I've got my guru over you, so why do I need to do that, Emma? Because you're there.
They'll be much more guru-like than me, and have much better records as well.
Yeah. And maybe the library, like you said, yeah, the library would be a good resource. And about electoral rolls, yeah, I think that's important. Could be interesting to see where these people were and what place it did. Because Northfield Road wasn't a familiar address to my mother and her brothers. They said, oh, we thought they lived in Norfolk Street. So there's all that already, but they probably lived in so many houses, as I said, that it'd be interesting to see where they all were.
Mm.
So good. Thank you, Helen.
Okay, have fun, and thank you so much for coming along to our podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Bye, Len.